And we're back. That was Phil Oakes. We think it's appropriate. We're going to be talking with Murray Dobbin. Are you there, Murray? Hello, Murray?
Yep.
Ah. Well, thanks very much for joining us. I read your article in of June 24, in Rabble. Seems very timely. The Prime Minister of Canada is today's headline, though, just to get us into your article, is Trudeau to sign a free trade deal with Ukraine. And in the article, it says that he discussed the meeting in Warsaw, and he said that he's enthusiastic about sending Canadian troops. Your article is titled, "As NATO Warmongering Against Russia Intensifies, Canada Faces a Difficult Choice." They seem to be going further down that road in the months since you wrote the article.
No, apparently it's not a difficult choice at all. I know, I was outraged. I mean, imagine, you know, the sheer stupidity of saying he's enthusiastic about putting Canadian troops on the Russian border. I mean, this is beyond irresponsible. It's completely reckless. You really have to wonder who on earth in foreign affairs and defense is advising the prime minister, because this is really quite dangerous. I mean, people just seem to be completely naive and blind about this. What would the United States do if Russia sent 1,000 troops to be stationed on the Mexican border?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would be a declaration of war, right? But this is the equivalent. It's really quite stunning, and the complete absence of any critique in the mainstream media is equally frightening. You have a prime minister who is apparently a foreign affairs idiot. Mm-hmm. And the media completely goes along with it. It's one of the most alarming developments I've seen in a long time. You don't even see this. Didn't even see this kind of. I mean, what you saw under Harper was pure opportunism, where he'd mm-hmm. you know, support the Ukraine because he wanted the Ukrainian vote in Canada. But this goes beyond even that. This isn't simply opportunism. This is completely kowtowing to American foreign policy, which is to, you know, basically encircle Russia and try mm-hmm. to neutralize a nuclear power. I mean, it's really quite alarming, and the public seems completely fine with it as well. So it's a dangerous situation.
The Toronto Star description of him was today the honeymoon is endless, or I think was roughly the way they put it. the love affair.
The love affair with the media with Trudeau.
I recall, and you're in BC, when he was wishing to be elected, one of his surrogates, Jean Chrétien, said that he thought, under the Trudeau government, there would be friendlier relations with Russia.
Trudeau said that too. And I think what happened, in spite of this alleged enthusiasm, I think the United States put enormous pressure on Trudeau behind the scenes, mm-hmm. Because it's clear that this did not seem to be Trudeau's position or his foreign affairs minister Dion. Maybe there's some quid pro quo behind the scenes. I mean, maybe I was thinking, well, maybe they'll get a deal on lumber, in exchange for troops and artillery and tanks on the Latvian border. It's really quite reckless.
You might be onto something. I noticed the same Globe article I cited before said that NATO Secretary General took the unusual step of publicly asking the Canadian government to step up. And certainly that is a problem, right? I mean, once they ask you publicly, you're really out there kind of naked.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to say no.
Exactly. Unless you take the position. I mean, it was not widely reported, and this is another frightening aspect of the media. There was a big article in the Globe that didn't even mention this, but the I believe it was the defense minister of Italy and the Prime Minister of France, Hollande, both said Russia is not our enemy, and we should not be threatening them. So, but where do you see that in the media? I mean, it was almost, it went almost unreported. And the German foreign minister said we have to stop the saber rattling and warmongering. But, you know, then these are, you know, France, Germany, and Italy, I'm sorry, Neil, after Britain, these are the three main European countries in terms of armed forces and military might. Yes. And all three of them are saying, you know, this doesn't look good. I mean, this is not what we believe.
Also, by the way, I want to ask you this, and I know you're of a generation, some of us have memories about what wars are like as opposed to overseas missions by commandos and a few hundred people. Wars, and particularly Europeans, understand that houses are blown flat, cities burn.
Well, in Russia lost.
They're talking. People here talk about war, and by the way, the prime minister is shocking how cavalier he is about. He says we have to show that we're willing to use force. Does he know what?
Did he say that? Was that? That's what he said today.
Yes, he did. That's in the Globe and Mail today. And by the way, when he says that, he's talking about 450 guys he's put in Latvia. Well, people who know what a war is
would all be dead in half an hour.
Yeah, 450 is just, well, it is not change. It just has no relevance. But also, sometimes I've traveled in Europe and around it. I have been told a few times, you people don't know what a war is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly. Well, and there was I was watching a really interesting program on Russia Today, the television network, which I watch regularly to get some balance, you know, in terms of what's going on. And they referred to a poll that was done, I think, late last year that showed, you know, virtually two-thirds of Europeans in most European, you know, certainly Western European countries, are completely opposed to this confrontation with Russia. So there is an historical memory in Europe, and they also remember that any, you know, virtually every country that thinks they can conquer Russia has ended up losing. But you know, you can understand why Russia is so concerned about it. They lost 21 million people in the Second World War. They lost as many people as all the other countries combined. There's reason for them to be concerned, and the sort of corridor, you know, the putting troops in the Balkans and in Poland, that is exactly the path which the German military followed when they invaded Russia.
All the way back to Napoleon.
Exactly.
They still use the same roads.
They use the same, the same roads and the same, you know, pile of bodies at the end of the end of the day.
Yes. We're speaking to Marie Dobbin, and the article is June 24. Speaking of historical memory, the title of their operation, they love these names. So it's called Operation, one of them was Operation Anaconda.
Right.
Now, Anaconda was a strategy of the Union Army in the Civil War, and it was to strangle, using the Anaconda as the metaphor, blockade and strangle the Confederates.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a rather
ugly idea to invoke, because these are not the Confederates. They don't have any slaves.
No, there's no state of war, and there's, the whole notion that Russia would invade Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania, and then pay the huge cost of occupying these countries, and you know, let alone Poland. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole notion is so preposterous that, you know, even someone in grade five wouldn't believe it. But apparently our media pundits and commentaries and news writers are all perfectly happy with the notion that, yes, Russia is on the verge of invading Latvia.
Yeah.
I'm not usually this exasperated, but I find myself in a state of exasperation.
I think we should be, because, you know, when somebody says something that's incomprehensible, we shouldn't pretend it made sense, you know.
No, exactly. And we need to demand some you know, responsible response to this. And yet, yes. No one, I can't, you know, in the stories I've read, no one has asked Mr. Trudeau to respond to the comments of the German foreign minister or the prime minister of France about, you know, Russia not being an enemy and that we should be.
Exactly. Shouldn't he, as a leader, address what they have to say?
Exactly.
As opposed to echoing.
But, I mean, nobody knows that they said it. You know, I think I've seen it in one article, and I'm not even sure I saw it in a Canadian article. I think it was actually in the Financial Times, not exactly your left-wing newspaper in Britain.
No, that's one of the easiest way to manage problems is simply not refer to them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've got, you know, and this, you know, this is another topic. I mean, my next column is on the total media complicity in terms of these so-called trade agreements. I mean, so we have two enormous areas of foreign policy, the two most important probably at the current time, the confrontation with Russia and the signing of these outrageously anti-democratic investment treaties like CETA and the TPP and all of these. The media is completely and grossly irresponsible on both these issues, in ways that I haven't seen in a long time. I mean, the media has you know, the mainstream media has clearly been declining over the, you know, ever since Conrad Black bought newspapers in the 1990s. But I haven't seen anything quite like this. I mean, it's just it's like a complete silence on two of the most important global issues.
Yeah. Well, by the way, you're a veteran journalist, and you must be noticing now that they're taking the occasion of the Brexit vote. We have editorial writers saying, oh, the people shouldn't be allowed to vote on these things. They don't know anything.
Exactly.
I mean, well, where the trend is.
Yeah,
it's toward more secrecy.
Yeah,
and don't trust the ugly, unwashed people.
Oh, exactly. Well, I mean, that's partly what my column is about. you know, and it's interesting. You know, I don't want to get divert from the topic of the interview, but on the trade stuff, I mean, Lawrence Summers, who was a former Treasury Secretary and Chief Economist of the World Bank, has just come out criticizing these trade agreements.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't want to listen to the unwashed, hysterical, angry masses, maybe they should listen to the former you know, Treasury Secretary who says these deals are bad for people.
It would have to push one of the bathed to the front.
Exactly.
Now, you make a very good point right off the top of your article, and speaking of, you know, asking a question and staying with it, the Canadians have never actually, in their great numbers, been enthusiastic about NATO. And the New Democratic Party always had it as part of their program they were going to leave. Surely, if a Canadian politician had the temerity to stand up and say, you know, it's time to re-examine why we're in NATO.
And why did it even exist?
Wouldn't that resonate with the Canadian people?
Well, it should have been gone in 1992. I mean, the whole, you know, the raison d'etre for NATO was to protect Europe from from Soviet communism. Well, that disappeared in a deal, and this is something else I pointed out in the article that the vast majority of people don't know is that the deal was with Gorbachev. Gorbachev said, "Well, I will dismantle the Soviet state and communism. In return, Secretary of State Baker from the United States said that NATO will not expand one inch to the east." Well, of course, they totally expanded. You know, they now have NATO members on the Russian border, and so it was a complete. And the other thing that people don't realize, I mean, Putin is no doubt an authoritarian and can be quite brutal, but he has also been, ever since he's been in power, he has been making an effort to integrate Russia into Europe. And he has been rebuffed at every turn. So that's something else that Canadians need to know.
Well, by the way, I mean, there was, as you point out, there was a rationale. NATO allegedly was going to stop communist expansionism. And following that, there was the Warsaw Pact, which was taken. It was dismantled. So the opponent disappeared.
Yes.
But so,
where do they hold the war games in Poland, of course, and where do they have the NATO meeting in Warsaw?
Yeah.
You know, this is not coincidental. I mean, is, again, it's just another way of being in the face of Russia to try to humiliate and cow and intimidate Putin, which, of course, is ludicrous. Mm-hmm. He's a nuclear power. On the other hand, they, you know, they ignore that. On the other hand, they pretend that this is this huge, huge military power. The military budgets of NATO countries are 20 times the Russian military budget, 20 mm-hmm. times. So the notion that Russia is this superpower waiting to pounce and sweep over Europe is, again, so much of this is just absurd.
Well, and again, it's on the level of sort of childish level, because in terms of international law, you have to, there are no borders that are, like in the Baltics, there's no border in dispute. There's no claim on the territory of any of these places. Matter of fact, when there was a Soviet Union, they had been in the Baltic, but they withdrew.
Yeah.
And said they didn't. They were not interested in being there.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the notion that occupying countries is an incredibly expensive proposition. So certainly not in Russia's interest to. I mean, and for what reason would mm-hmm. they occupy these countries?
Mm-hmm. Well, Murray, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you, Murray Dobbin. And the article is in Rabble, June 24. We need to talk a lot more about this. Let's hope that we can find one politician in Canada, and if not Murray Dobbin, to keep arguing the point.
Yes, it would be great to find someone. I mean, the NDP now is also completely silent on this. And yet, you know, I mean, how on earth does the NDP think it will distinguish itself in any policy area if it doesn't have the courage to take a principled stand on this? I mean, this, you know, we're basically the NDP could proclaim, look, we are in danger of provoking war with Russia. I mean, that should get someone's attention.
Yes.
But we are without any political representation in Parliament on this issue, which is, again, another frightening aspect of it.
Yeah, and at a time when the population seems to have its ears pricked up for new leaders, the British did it with Jeremy Corbyn,
yeah.
You can see there's a mood, and the party seems to be afraid of the mood.
Well, the party's afraid of itself, and it's afraid of its own supporters. It's made a fatal error in keeping Tom Mulcair, you know, for another year. My current thinking is that the NDP would do the country a huge favor if it just disbanded and let something else. I'm completely serious. I mean, one of the things that I, you know, reluctantly admired Preston Manning for when he formed the Reform Party back in 1989, he said, if we don't take power in 20 years, we disband. Because he wasn't dedicated to any particular party.
Yeah, it's
party.
A movement to achieve something.
Exactly. He was
and if you don't achieve it, regroup.
Exactly. He was dedicated to an objective. And if he couldn't do it, he gets off the stage and lets someone else. But the NDP is not really a political party. It's a cult. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't matter how many times their organizers lose elections, they just keep hiring them.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's another topic for another discussion.
You won't be invited to that part of the building where they meet.
No, I haven't been invited by them for a very long time.
Well, good on you. Murray Dobbin, thank you very, very much.
Okay, no problem.
Okay, look forward to talking to you again.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Taylor Report. I think we have something musical coming up, and then we will be back with Safar Bengage.